This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, a new survey from the WAO on violence against women produced some rather depressing results.
So it found, among other things, that more than 80% believe that rape happens when a man cannot control his desires, and more than half the respondents believe that domestic violence is a normal reaction to stress. So first, we speak with a representative from the WAO about the survey, and then later on, we catch up with a psychiatrist about the dynamics of domestic violence.
Tell us, what do you think is going on here? How can we address this? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and as we said, the premise of today's Inside Story really comes from a survey that the Women's Aid Organization did. So they spoke to 1,000 Malaysians to understand their attitudes and perceptions towards violence against women. And I must say, these statistics that have come as a result of the survey are both shocking and not shocking. And I think that's partly what left me feeling so disheartened.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you hope for better, but then when you see the results, you think, oh, that tracks. So I think the ones that have really stood out are what we mentioned just a minute ago, which is that 83.4% believe that rape happens when a man cannot control himself. 51.3% felt that sexual crimes happen due to the way a woman dresses, for example. Meanwhile, on domestic violence, like we mentioned earlier, more than half, that's 53%, believe that it's actually a normal reaction of stress or frustration. In that same vein, 43% believe that a woman can make a man so angry that he hits her even when he doesn't mean to. And in line with that, I actually wanted to tie that up with another statistic, because 26.5% believe that domestic violence is forgivable if the perpetrator is so angry that they lose control. And I think that, you know, if you look at those as a whole, they're all somewhat of a piece. It's to do with this idea of anger, of being pushed to a point. And after that, at least for 26.5% of the respondents, of the action being forgivable.
And, you know, there are more statistics. They don't get any better, I'll warn you. But I just wanted to say that this is really, I think, a damning indictment of the narratives that surround violence against women, as much as it is about attitudes, right? Because it's one thing... it's one thing for the perpetrators to behave in a certain way, but I think how we frame it and how we talk about it between each other as a society also informs why it's so difficult to get to the root of these problems. And again, on that vein of things being, you know, perceptions or narratives, when it comes to abusive relationships, 44.9% of people believe that women who stay with abusive partners are also responsible for the ongoing abuse. On gender inequality, 30.9% of people believe that many women are exaggerating when they talk about unequal treatment in Malaysia.
So I wanted to touch on something that you brought up just then about societal narratives and how we think about, talk about these things. Because, of course, I think that one thing here is to consider that among the 1,000 people who responded to this, you are going to have parents, you're going to have people who teach in some capacity, you're going to have people who generally communicate with others, who move through society, you know, holding these views, and therefore having these views affect the way they react to stories, having these views affect the way that they participate in conversations. And I was thinking about the term influencer and how now it's been taken to mean specifically social media, specifically someone trying to sell you something. But the truth of the matter is that all of us in some capacity are influencers. That is the whole point, you know, because we speak to our friends, we speak to our family, our kids. And I think that what struck me, especially for that percentage when it came to rape, is this lack of empathy that exists for the survivor of that incident. Because if you I don't know. There's something about that percentage that speaks to an empathy with the perpetrator. It means that you are able to see that perception more so than you are able to see the side of the survivor or the victim. And I think that there is something about that and about the way we think about and talk about these issues that I'm glad that this survey has surfaced, but at the same time, I'm so deeply sad that this is the position that we hold.
And that's not different from the statistic on domestic violence, right, which we are going to address more significantly later, this notion that when you're stressed or frustrated, it's okay to physically lash out on someone. Not okay, perhaps, but understandable, which in itself, I think, is a way of normalizing a particular type of behavior. And as you said, Lynn, this idea of how we say things and how it may influence the people who are around us, if you hear that enough, if you hear that it is understandable or normal that this might happen, how then do we expect people caught in these sorts of relationships to be able to seek some sort of recourse or to even identify that they don't deserve to be treated that way?
Well, that would come with building systems, right? Good systems in place so that survivors know where to go, which we know is lacking at the moment. Or rather, not lacking so much as overwhelmed. We heard about so many of the services that are actually available being completely overwhelmed during the pandemic because suddenly people were shut up with their abusers. And so, yeah, I mean, my hope is that at least with something like this, it can inform the way that policies are actually drafted, the way that systems are actually thought about when it comes to these issues. And I don't know. And that in talking about it, there is also a sense of affirmation for the people who look at these results and think, that's not me, or I don't identify with that opinion.
We're discussing a survey by the Women's Aid organization that has produced some rather depressing results, really. You know, over 80% of people thinking that rape happens when a man cannot control his desire. More than 50% of people believing that domestic violence is a normal reaction to stress, among other things. And we'd like to hear from you. Really, I think the question that's been on both our minds is, what's the problem? What's going on here? How can we address these issues? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Isabel Chung from the WAO. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're focusing on a survey that was conducted by the Women's Aid Organization, centered on violence against women and attitudes towards that, producing some rather dampening results, really, and that's putting it mildly. We'd like to hear from you. What do you think is going on here? What's the gap when it comes to addressing this issue? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Isabel Chung, who is Research and Advocacy Officer at the Women's Aid Organization. Isabel, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Sharmila. Hi, Lynn. It's nice to be here again.
So could you start by sharing the thought process behind the survey and what you were hoping to find out?
Okay, well, I think generally we wanted to find out more about violence against women. Data on a national level is sorely lacking, and this was a way for us to get more information. A lot of our efforts have been very much geared towards things like prevalence studies, right? Understanding how widespread things like domestic violence, sexual harassment, stalking is. And while important, we decided to study attitudes because these are the underlying factors of violence. Societal norms, attitudes and societal norms kind of shape how we understand and think about violence, how we talk about it, how we practice it, whether consciously or unconsciously, and certainly how we account for it at a policy level. So kind of think of it this way, right? Addressing attitudes is a means to prevent violence before it happens.
Now, we touched on this earlier. The findings are disturbing. Over half the respondents blamed women for rape. Similarly, over half said that domestic violence is a normal reaction to stress or frustration. What do you think is the root cause of these kinds of beliefs?
this is such a huge question, and it can really be dissected into a lot of layers. But ultimately, these come from a society that normalizes violence and victim blaming. So why this happens is that patriarchal values in a patriarchal society, patriarchal values sort of put importance on male dominance and female success in various aspects of our lives. You know, expecting women to take abuse and then blaming women for it because of these ideas that men can't control themselves or have every right to exert power. And often patriarchal values dictate that these are the norms of society. And as individuals, kind of like part of this society, we hold on to these norms and subsequently perpetuate them when they're so ingrained that it's hard to recognize that they're problematic.
Isabel, I wanted to reference a call that we got from a listener a while ago, Ling, but also in a larger sense, what was the demographic of the respondents?
Yeah, this is a really important question. Thank you. Our sample is actually nationally representative. There were 1,000 respondents, 1,000 respondents, and they were representative in terms of gender, age group, ethnicity, regional distribution, and also income level, income group. So that's really important because due to the size of our sample and also the fact that it's nationally representative, the results here can actually, they're actually seen as like, they can be seen as a reflection of Malaysian society at large, right? It's not just isolated to these 1,000 people, it's a societal thing. It can be extrapolated.
Mm. And of course, the value of these surveys is also showing how a society might be viewing something at a moment in time, right? It's like a snapshot.
Yeah.
Do we know if attitudes on this issue have shifted over time?
Unfortunately, no. This is the first large-scale, again, nationally representative study of public attitudes towards violence against women in Malaysia. I think the last one was about 25 years ago, and it was much smaller. So, you know, these results kind of serve as a baseline measure of attitudes. And we hope that efforts to track attitudes consistently can emulate efforts in other countries like Australia, like Scotland, because these are a proxy indicator of how acceptable violence is in a society. And we really need to understand the extent of the problem from various angles.
Now, when it comes to awareness of these issues around domestic and sexual violence, what did the survey find? Are most Malaysians aware of these issues?
From the survey, we know that over 90% of Malaysians can identify physical violence, while over 80% can identify non-physical forms of violence when it's explicitly described. So, for example, a question asking if slapping or pushing is a form of domestic violence. So, in that way, knowledge of what violence looks like is quite strong. However, we are lacking a more nuanced understanding of violence against women, right? Wherein violence appears to be somewhat acceptable when it's relayed as an emotional or uncontrollable act. And the source of these so-called uncontrollable emotions are often tied back to women. You know, over 40% of our population believes that a woman can make a man so angry that he hits her, while about a third believes that women who flirt cause jealousy that results in abuse. And often, like, women are held responsible for causing the abuse and also for guarding themselves against it through their words or their actions or attire. But ultimately, patterns of victim blaming are a means to justify violence, meaning that being able to recognize it doesn't mean that we understand how severe it is, and this in turn is part of how we normalize violence in society.
I think nuance is also an important part to talk about, because Malaysians in the survey findings tended to underestimate the complexity of abuse, blaming women who stay with abusive partners, not fully understanding non-physical forms of violence like stalking, mm-hmm. like controlling behaviour. What can be done to help people understand the more nuanced aspects of violence against women and incidents of abuse?
Yeah, so I guess one strength of this survey is that it has pinpointed very specific myths that are pervasive in Malaysian society. So as you said, like the idea that women are responsible for abuse, for not leaving, or because of causing negative emotions in somebody else or something. So prevention or awareness campaign should address these very directly and debunk them with a very specific emphasis against victim blaming and ideas that abuse is uncontrollable because ultimately it is a conscious act by the perpetrator alone. And I think with like awareness and prevention campaigns, we also need to very, and training programs, right, educational programs, we need to very clearly talk about how abuse often stems from power imbalances and how patterns of exclusion from decision-making in the household and in public life disempower women and hold them back from speaking up for fear of being doubted or the abuser finding out and the abuse worsening. So really getting people to understand that it takes a lot to speak up against abuse and to seek help, especially in a society that doesn't completely understand it.
Now, this might be a pretty large question, but what needs to happen to change these attitudes, both in the short and long term?
I guess also, well, we do have like a general list of recommendations, but very broadly, again, nuance prevention and awareness campaigns are very important. Those that not just highlight how violence is an issue, but also talk about, again, like power imbalances in abusive relationships, how it stems from an unhealthy desire for control and dominance, and how difficult it can be to leave an abusive environment that diminishes your voice while also fearing the disbelief of those around you. The other thing is that honestly, consistent willpower to address and combat violence, endorsing attitudes and violence as the public health crisis that it is, needs to be there. And also, importantly, attitudes are not something that change overnight. It's a long-term investment that requires a lot of effort and consistent and effective monitoring.
How does WAO plan to use these findings? Can they be translated into, for example, policy responses?
Yes, we do have several key recommendations for the government. So first, well, one of the main ones being that prevention programs need to directly challenge violence-endorsing attitudes. And we need to have these elements incorporated into training programs for frontline officers, like the police, like healthcare staff, like Dalian Pase, hotline operators. It's also important to build a knowledgeable and empowered society. So we need to invest in public information campaigns that raise awareness towards the nuances of violence, as well as the various help-seeking avenues in place. And also, like one of the very big things that we recommend is that the government should conduct this survey periodically. You know, make it a national initiative as a means to collect and have comprehensive data on gender inequality and violence in Malaysia. And more generally, data has to be transparent, such as data regarding child marriage, to better inform future research and advocacy initiatives as well as prevention programs. Mm.
So I wanted to pick on one aspect from the survey that stood out. Now, it did find that 70% of respondents opposed child marriage. What did you make of this response? Was it something you expected?
I think we're pretty glad or relieved with this response. While not everybody, 70% is a huge majority, and this does support previous calls by many civil society organizations, academics, and in recent years, members of the general public to raise the minimum legal age of marriage to 18. However, the remaining 30% who are uncertain about child marriage or are explicitly supportive of it, this proportion is a concern, and further analysis and research will help us understand which groups are more likely to support or not take a stance, or maybe not feel that they have to take a stance, and we can kind of work from there.
And finally, how can people start a conversation with those around them about this issue, or about violence against women?
I guess it's in our everyday actions, right? It starts, I would think that it starts very internally. You know, we need to be able to understand on our own that everyone needs to take a stance in a society kind of governed by patriarchal norms, and one in which violence is normalized. Not taking a stance often means defaulting towards violence-endorsing attitudes. And it takes a lot to like reflection to understand how we might contribute to this unconsciously, and how we can hold ourselves, and that can help us understand how to hold ourselves and those around us accountable against it. We also need to be ready to speak up, acknowledging and saying that, you know, it's not okay to make rape jokes about women, even if it's just a so-called joke, because it contributes to a larger culture and pattern of normalizing violence. And very importantly, like, I think believing survivors of violence is very, very important. Recognizing that that women don't lie about violence, and that speaking up takes a lot of courage and a lot of time for some.
Isabel, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Isabel Chung, Research and Advocacy Officer at Women's Aid Organization, speaking to us about a survey that they conducted on violence against women, and specifically attitudes towards violence against women, and uncovering I think a series of really disheartening, depressing statistics. So that's what we've been trying to unpack. And after this, we'll hone in on one specific aspect of that. Basically, that more than half the respondents believe that domestic violence is understandable because when it happens due to stress. And so we wanted to get into that with a psychiatrist. So we'll be joined by Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq Ben Amir Nordin. And I think just really discuss that issue of emotions and the connection between how that might play into not just the issue of domestic violence, but in relationships as well. So keep those thoughts coming. What do you think is going on here? Why are these survey results, I suppose, both so shocking but also depressingly familiar? How can we address this? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're looking at a survey that was conducted by the Women's Aid Organization that focuses on attitudes towards violence against women. And some very depressing results, honestly. Among them, 80% of the respondents believe that rape happens because men cannot control their desires. Meanwhile, more than 50% of respondents think that domestic violence it's understandable when it's caused by stress or frustration. So we've been unpacking the results and really trying to figure out why this is happening and how we can address this. You can continue to weigh in. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We do have these messages.
Yes. So let's start with this one from Ro, who says there is a watch manufacturer which has a famous tagline, "You never actually own said watch. You merely look after it for the next generation." I think it's the same for respect towards women. Sons learn from fathers who are often influenced by their own and sadly cultural and religious okays. A man who respects women breaks this vicious cycle, making it okay to think and behave that way. And I agree wholeheartedly with that. I would also say that it isn't just sons who learn from fathers. I think that it's entire family units learning from parents. And that's why, I mean, when we talk about the results of the survey, while it is framed as violence against women, because that's what the survey is meant to capture, it isn't, the results aren't gendered as such, you know? And I think that that's something that's also kind of tough to wrap your head around sometimes.
I think the term unlearn has become a little bit of a buzzword, but I actually think it's an important one, because what it gets at is the heart of basically needing to recognize the things we've been conditioned to think as normal and then making decisions and choices that go against it. And it's actually a surprisingly hard thing to do, because so many of the things that we grow up with are actually things that we need to unlearn. And this message from an anonymous listener actually gets at some of that. They say, sometimes we forget what Malaysia can be like under the surface of the quote-unquote peace and harmony. The survey is shocking yet familiar, is best illustrated when we think of our families and extended families. As much as we don't want to admit it, we know that it exists in our lives. We probably grew up or are growing old with verbal and physical violence. I believe this is beyond what policy can do. We need media such as movies, events and books and so on to work harder to create a cultural shift and change the mindset of the population.
I think that that's an interesting one, partly because it comes on the heels of Ro talking about the importance of the family unit. And I think I'm going to sound like a broken record. I say this about almost everything, but I believe it. I think that it's a systemic thing. Everybody needs to be working in concert, right? You need the you need it from the home, you need it from whatever's being reinforced through the media, you need it being taught in schools. You know, it has to be drummed in over and over again so that what we now consider as normal eventually is thought of as not, because it is not. The idea that some of these behaviors and opinions are normalized is really troubling. I also think this idea of media playing a role is an interesting one. I would extend that to public figures and how they speak and behave while out and about.
And I think where policy comes in is really both, of course, as you know, a protective measure, but also to send a signal or to set the tone that these things are important. That's why policy is important, because when a government takes a stand on something by using laws, then society at large then, I think, is more convinced to look at it as being unacceptable behaviour. We have this from an anonymous listener as well, who says, I used to know a person who was molested by her grandfather when she was young, and that really affected her mental health. Her parents knew, always got her to avoid him during festive seasons. Her parents knew and did nothing. Now, this seems like a very Malaysian thing to do, and I don't know what I would do either if I knew that one of my relatives was a sexual predator.
I don't know if this is just a very Malaysian thing to do, sadly. I think that this is, whenever we talk about sexual violence and abuse, we hear these sorts of stories, and it's so sad. And I think that, to go back to that idea of systems and safe places, I think that especially as a child, you need to know that if you go to your family, they'll take care of you.
Keep those thoughts coming. We are discussing a survey by the Women's Aid Organization that basically unearthed some very disappointing attitudes towards violence against women. After this, we'll be picking up on one specific aspect, which is the normalizing of domestic violence in relation to stress or frustration. And for that, we'll be speaking with Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin from University of Malaya Medical Center. But keep those thoughts coming, and you can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:44 rather, and you're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're wrapping up our conversation on a survey that the Women's Aid Organization did regarding attitudes on violence against women. And we're going to now look at one specific aspect, which essentially the survey uncovered that more than 50% of people think that domestic violence is understandable when it's caused by stress or frustration. So we'd like to unpack that. We'll shortly be joined by Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin. But do weigh in. What do you think is going on here? How can we address this issue of violence against women? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now on the line with us is Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, who is a consultant psychiatrist at University Malaya Medical Center. Dr. Amir, thank you for being with us today. Now, to start off, what are your thoughts on these findings that 53% of respondents believe that domestic violence is a normal reaction to stress and frustration?
Well, thank you very much again for inviting me. To be fair, when I first received this message, I was actually very shocked to see the findings that were found by the WAO study. In fact, I would have come close to saying the word preposterous. However, at the same time, it's probably something that sadly we need to acknowledge does happen in our country. However, like I mentioned, I'm not in favor of it. I hope that these numbers are not true, but sadly they are as they are, and we probably need to look a little bit more into the study to really understand fully the extent of these findings.
So what do you think might be the root cause of this belief?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, even from the recent pandemic situation, we have noted an increased rise in domestic violence. In fact, that was one of the first calls for psychosocial support among partners that were living in homes during the MCO. There are many causes one could say in terms of the factors that might increase the risk of domestic violence. Of course, there's going to be issues with regards to probably to some level culture, the lack of awareness, poverty being another one. You know, a fourth one could be, you know, monkey see, monkey do. If you've got violence happening in the family, it could be intergenerational. So, of course, definitely the increased levels of stress, in this case, as a result of multi-factors due to the pandemic. So there are many, many reasons why people could resort to domestic violence. And then one of them that has often been cited as well is the use of substance as well, which could also increase that risk.
Could you talk to us about the dynamics at play when it comes to domestic violence? And is this different from a situation where a spouse has purely anger management issues, for example?
Well, I think first of all, everybody has emotions. So one could feel sad, one could feel happy, and also one could feel angry. And anger itself comes in many forms. You could have an emotional or a psychological aspect of anger, and you could also have a physical aspect of anger. When it comes to domestic violence, we're talking about violence towards an individual that happens, and often this is going to be an intimate partner. So I think it's a little bit different and beyond the level of anger. When we're looking into the psychology of domestic violence, often it's cited that it is an issue with regards to power. There's a power difference between partners that might result in one partner feeling overly powerful towards the other, and this in the end results in a negative relationship between them. Also, there could be an element of control as well, or an element of disrespect. And I think these are some of the factors that might increase that risk for domestic violence, particularly in certain cultures.
And the other aspect of this belief is that, you know, violence is a normal reaction to stress and frustration. So briefly, could you explain what healthy reactions to stress and frustration might look like?
Well, again, everybody has a reaction towards stress. And often we know that we need a little bit of stress in order to function. Of course, as we have too much stress, we become distressed and sometimes become dysfunctional when this, this stress is chronic in its nature. Often the normal reaction towards stress is going to be psychological and emotional. Physiological means that individuals will maybe have a bit of increase in heart rate. They might have a bit of sweating. They're really going for a flight and fight mode. It's almost like a tiger's in front of them, they're ready to run. At the same time, they're feeling, all their senses are actually ready to pounce. So they could be feeling apprehension, a little bit of fear. And of course, sometimes they'll be emotional as well, where they want to do something about it. So this would be probably the normal reaction that one would expect. Once there's going to be an element where the person's physiological aspects become more physical, to the point that one loses control of the situation, then I think that becomes abnormal. And of course, this would result in many negative consequences, violence being one of them, of course, but also maybe destruction of properties and certain items as well, which sometimes individuals can have. And I think it's all about poor coping mechanisms, actually, to be fair, where these individuals probably had learned at some point in their life to cope in this manner, and they were not reprimanded or told otherwise, and therefore they continue to cope in this way, even though it's become less helpful in the journey of them managing their stress. So I think this is where the violence comes in for certain populations of individuals.
So generally, are men and women conditioned to react to stress and anger differently?
Yes, apparently some research that suggests that men are normally on a fight and flight mode, so they're a little bit more ready to pounce, a bit more physical. Women, on the other hand, have been said to be a little bit more, tend to befriend individuals or become a little bit more emotional. And there have been some research suggesting that there are certain parts of the brain where men and women differ in terms of the ways that they manage stress, and therefore their reaction towards it becomes a little bit different. So in a way, it sort of explains a little bit of the potential behavior that maybe men have against, compared to women, for example. But let's be very clear here. Definitely, even if it's biological in that sense, there is no acceptable way that we can accept violence against another human being. I think if there's going to be ways to cope that doesn't include violence, definitely this would be the best way possible moving forward. And all men and women need to learn better ways to cope that doesn't involve hurting anybody.
Now, how much of this might also be driven by society normalizing certain types of behaviors? Simply put, does us collectively saying that this is expected make it easier for people to behave this way?
Yeah, I know. I was reading into that survey again, and there was this tacit acceptance towards violence. In fact, I think some of the findings were suggesting that it's an individual's fault that people would be acting upon them. I think this is definitely something that we should not condone. You know, there is no acceptable manner where a person should be laying their hands on another person. As much as we can, there are many other ways to cope, more positive ways to cope. You know, if you're feeling angry, as we often talk about in therapy, we ask them to maybe stop whatever they're doing, get out of the room, for example, have a drink of water, maybe do something else differently. We often talk about not getting into any discussions or arguments if they're starting to feel angry because it's not going to be very positive. So there are many, many ways that individuals can actually cope that doesn't resort to violence. I think what we really need to do now, and as per the recommendations, and I agree with them, is that we really need to increase the awareness that, you know, violence is unacceptable, even if you're angry. It is something that we should be you know, looking negatively towards. It's not something that we should be accepting in any form, whether tacit or frank. We shouldn't have this type of behavior because it's really going to be very dangerous for certain populations in our society.
So earlier you mentioned that people can develop negative habitual responses to stress and anger over time. How can we teach people to manage and regulate their emotions from an early age?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I think, first of all, we've talked about, and I think there are lots of small groups, particularly newer NGOs, have been talking about getting children to actually fully understand their emotions. And I think this also works for adults. There are many of us, due to maybe cultural reasons, have not been able to express our emotions in a very positive manner. Some of us are not even aware what these emotions are. They might be feeling depressed. They didn't know that they're depressed. They know that they're feeling sad, but they don't know what this emotional depress is. Similarly, with regards to anger, frustration, for example, whereby an individual might be going through certain emotions and they're not really sure what they are. As a result of that, when you're unable to name this emotion, then therefore you're unable to act on this emotion. So I think we really need to start educating people at an early age about the various emotions that we have. And we talk about the normal emotions, and all emotions are normal. It's just the way that we react to these emotions that might be a little bit different. And therefore, we need to teach individuals to be able to cope better. You know, for example, if you're going to be teaching somebody to cope by, say, throwing stones at other person, that's probably not a good way of coping. You probably need to teach them better ways of coping. And of course, start teaching them the word respect very early on, so that at least, you know, if you are starting to feel angry, then because of the, you know, the understanding of respect, you probably are not going to infringe into an individual space. And therefore, hopefully this will reduce some level of violence that we are seeing, sadly, in our society.
Now, currently, do we have enough psychosocial support for families when domestic violence has taken place?
No, I don't think so. I think, number one, we need people who are really trained in this area. Number two is that we need people with high resilience and ability to cope themselves with regards to these situations. I have to admit that this is definitely some area of work that I myself might have some trouble in actually managing due to the sheer visual aspects of the violence, and not only about the emotional trauma that individuals go through. So I think the answer is no. We need, number one, adequate enough of therapists, whether they are psychiatrists, counselors, or even psychologists. But more importantly, when we're talking about domestic violence, we need individuals who are trained to understand and appreciate the very complex situation that these individuals are going, not only to the victims, but also to the perpetrators. And of course, develop strategies in order to assist them to further be, you know, assisted moving forward. Because it's just not one individual that's affected. Often it's going to be a group of individuals, which includes family and also friends as well. And therefore, you know, this particular thing needs a lot of input from various trained stakeholders out there.
Now, just taking a step back, a number of other responses in that survey also indicate a lack of empathy for survivors of sexual and domestic violence. How can we address this notion of empathy, and why is that so important when we talk about or think about the impact of these issues?
And again, you know, I was actually quite shocked as well, looking at those statements, to be fair. I suspect that sometimes when it hasn't befallen into these particular individuals, they might not be as empathetic in their responses as one would be. Secondly, often we see a lack of some of this empathy going through in surveys because there's this detachment from the case and the context at hand. I think we really need to have empathy, and I think there are programs that are run out there. For example, by the RAGE group in STAR, which looks at trying to teach empathy early on, because we're seeing that once individuals are taught empathy, therefore they're more likely to be better citizens of the society, and hopefully that would be cause a better communal positive reaction as well. So again, empathy, if you're not aware, is actually putting your shoes in another person's situation. You don't have to be fully immersed in it, but just the fact that you're thinking about them and the situation that they're at itself hopefully allows you to react better towards whatever the situation that we are all in at that point of time. And I think the last words probably is to be kind, especially during this pandemic, because you really do not know what people are going through at this point of time. You know, the person who's smiling out there might be, as we've just discussed, going through a very tough time in his or her home. And similarly, the guy who's sad out there could also be going through something totally different. So I think the word that we need is to be kind, and of course, to learn how to be empathetic towards everybody and anybody that we meet and see.
Dr. Amir, thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you very much.
That was Associate Professor Dr. Amir Siddiq bin Amir Nordin, Consultant Psychiatrist at University Malaya Medical Centre, weighing in on the WAO survey. And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think is going on here with these findings on violence against women? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.